When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, cool dudes, and welcome to another episode of Matt Makes a Movie, in which I talk to filmmakers about their experiences making shorts, features, and all that business. And then I use that to help me make my own film. What? I'm making a film? Yes. People who've listened have donated £843 so far. Thank you very much to every single one of you. I have now filmed most of my film, and I've started to edit it. Anyone who's donated anything will get sent a link to the finished film and probably be really disappointed. Anyway, this week I spoke to Andy Wooding, who started making his short about 4 years ago and is just about to finish it. And he talks about all of his experiences. And the great thing about his short is that all the profits are going to a cancer charity for young people. So do have a listen, and don't forget to like and subscribe on all the relevant channels. Also, I'm going to be starting another podcast, hopefully called Marek's Bedtime Stories, shortly. So keep an eye out for that. Anyway, good luck out there. Here's the interview. Bye. Hello, listeners. I am here with Andy Wooding in his flat, and we're going to talk about a film that you've been making for a very long time.
Yeah.
So it's called To Trend on Twitter, and I think I met you at a Super Bob party,
yeah.
Which is a film, British film, yeah.
Yeah.
And you said, would you come and do a part in your film? Tell me about the whole thing, how it got off the ground.
Yeah, basically the project came about because I'd worked in publicity, comedy and whatnot, and I'd heard like some very weird things being said in those fields, not in the comedy one so much, but in the publicity one. I heard stuff like somebody asking for a plus one to Amy Winehouse's funeral, like weird,
wow.
Yeah, weird, a few weird things like that.
A plus one.
I know, it's kind of nuts, but yeah, that definitely happened. And just those like raised eyebrows moments that people have around celebrities, people, I'm handling this guy and I'm handling that, and it just seemed, because it's somebody that has been on posters and been on TV and whatever, they can't be human and just do what everyone else does. They have to be treated in this weird special way. So that, obviously, you look at it and you go, okay, that's weird. There's also the whole culture with the internet growing of people pretending to, you know, pretending things that they're not, so that they can, you know, get attention, because before they would have to just be annoying in a village or something, and now they can just be annoying to the whole world through the internet. So, you know, people faking, the woman faked brain cancer. I've actually got a whole raft of these stories that are real stories.
Oh, really?
On which they kind of influenced the film to a degree.
So it's about what, the film is about a woman who's a mum.
Yeah.
And then she just decides to become a famous sort of internet
star. Yeah, she's got a terminally ill son, and through a series of events becomes world famous for that. She doesn't have any sort of distinguishable skill before becoming famous. So it's not like she was trying to. She's just sort of, through fate, plucked in and thrown into celebrity. And it just kind of came out, I suppose. I'd done a lot of different things of I'd done a lot of really, really out and out comedy, wacky, farcical stuff. Then I'd done some serious, maybe like Coen Brothers tinged dark comedies, written those up, went out to AFM and Cannes and stuff with those, and got in dialogues with really decent known actors about being in them. And then the kind of conversations that led from there was like, well, he's free in 14 months, or he may not commit, or he's free in 14, all that kind of stuff where you're just like, I'm not making anything now. I've been sitting on this script for 2 years or a year or whatever, and that's frustrating. I also wanted to marry all the things that I like, which is cinema, comedy, and music, and then all of those things saying something. You know, all the comic, I love all types of each of those mediums, but I do like something that has a point to make about the world. I just enjoy that when I see something. If it can make you laugh or sing along or whatever, and then you're also, oh, that's also about the world, and it's a bit sad. I like that. So it just sort of came out as a marriage of all of those three things, really. And then I was like, oh, right, this is going to probably cost a lot of money, and I have to just somehow get it.
So you've written the script.
Yeah.
You've said people find the idea interesting.
Yeah.
And then what do you do? You asked people you knew to help you fund it then together.
Yeah, yeah. So I wanted to... So I crowdfund... You know, I don't want to make it sound like I was too strategic about it, because there was a lot of serendipity that happened with this film. But basically, I crowdfunded some money. I put some of it... I did the initial shoot dates on credit card. There are about three or four of those. And then as it ramped up to do these charity scenes and these bigger scenes, I was like, okay, I'm gonna need help. This is too big. I can't fund that. I can't earn some money, wait a couple of weeks.
So these are the scenes with like loads of extras where you need like a producer and a few people sort of wrangling the crowds and
lighting it properly. Yeah, yeah. Well, you need the money for the... Because this film, by the way, is for Click Sergeant. It's for a Kids with Cancer charity. So the idea is that whatever the lead character or any of the other surrounding characters do or don't learn, you'll have to watch it to find out. But whatever they do or don't learn in that, we're actually like helping a charity in the process of making a point or making people laugh watching the film. So
that's great that you've done all that hard work and then you're giving the money to charity.
Yeah. No, it's nice, but I mean, it's upsetting. Like just that very concept of you being 5, 6, or 7, or the parents of somebody, and then your childhood is kind of that. You know, that's I find that sad. So, you know, that was something that I wanted to obviously playfully explore in comedy, but also just, you know, it's that sucks. So. That's the goal of it. But by the point that we got to the bigger scenes, it was really, oh my God, there's lots of money needed, lots of stuff. But it was the expenses for everybody, because everyone would generously, generously give their time and skill to be a part of the project. So no one was getting paid on it, but everyone was getting their expenses and meals paid. And when you've got 100 people, that's more expensive than
I didn't realize. Than just three. Just doing even like a couple of people going, all right, need to get some food. Oh, there's no shops nearby. We have to go to the pub for this lunch. Oh shit, that's 50 quid.
Yeah, exactly. So there's that. And then when you're doing the bigger scenes as well, you can't just shoot that on sticks. That has to be, if it's a ballroom scene and there's a great band like Benoit Viafon and his orchestra are playing in the scenes in the ballroom, you need to swoop down from the ceiling and make it feel, you know, when we then see her lost at this event, a type of event she's never been to before, we need to really feel that we're with her in that, and being, oh my God, I'm at this massive thing and I'm all on my own and I'm clutching my purse, and you know, so the bigger scenes also required, you know, bigger gear or
and it wasn't a set. What I'm fascinated by this project is it was like a really long shoot period.
Yeah,
because when you're,
I don't want to say it because I don't know, but I don't know if anyone's taken this long to make a short. Like, I don't know if it's possible. It's, It's crazy. Yeah, we shot it sporadically from 2014 until 2016, with a post period of about a year and a half. So like the entire thing took a long time.
Why was that? Because you had to get people's, because you're not paying people, you have to work around when they're free.
It was scheduling, and it was also like, okay, I need to earn some money to pay off what I've just spent. So also the next scene is going to be massive, so let's take a few months out. Luckily, because of Keely, the lead actress, and Jordan Cushing, the DP, because they were so invested in the project and so wonderful, like, they were there throughout, and they were the people that needed to be there the most throughout, because it really is Susie's story. And having those two just willing to continually, like, oh yeah, we're going to be back on, do you want to do it again? And they were always there for the project. That made it really easy to do, you know, whereas if, you know, maybe someone else would be like, oh, again, have we not finished doing this? We did it for a lot of times, and, you know, everybody else went off and did different things during that 2 year period, but they were always, there was never a like, I'm not in now, or sorry, can we wait 4 months? It was always like, yeah, we want to keep doing this way. And like Boyhood came out at some point during that, and I did think, God, like, it's turning into that.
But we'll wait another 2 years.
It's turning into that, but we're not going to make any money, and we're not going to win any Oscars for it. But yeah, it was.
You never know.
Yeah, well, you never know. But yeah, it's. And I'll actually say, it is reading stories. Like, before that, I read a lot of, you know, there's a great interview series by University of Mississippi Press that does interviews with directors. Reading about how everyone approaches things so differently gave me a bit of freedom to feel that, this is, you know, the minute you're doing something and you don't have the conviction behind it and you're going, oh, is this how you're supposed to do it? That's when you can start really screwing up. And I knew that a lot of people had made films in this way, whether it's like your Clarks do it in 3 weeks thing, or whether it's, you know, do this Bohemian, we'll raise some money, then wait a while and raise, you know, I was comfortable doing that. Although it was nerve wracking to think that, you know, oh God, don't move countries or do anything like that. You know, also just like, just the general, I'll say just this about the overall project, doing a project like that, where you're having to talk to so many different actors, different musicians, different crew, different businesses to ask for favors and stuff. It was just a really nice adventure and journey in terms of just like talking to humans, because so many people are nice. Like, I didn't, like, it was really like, I cried a couple of times during making this, not in a like, oh my God, who is so nice, but I cried a couple of times because maybe like one or two people weren't nice. And I was a little disappointed, but overall, everyone was so lovely, and it 300 plus, you know, for a short. Most shorts are often, you know, a coffee conversation or something. You know, they're not in multiple locations. They're not like 30 locations and 300 plus people and whatever. And the amount of people that, whether their families had or hadn't been affected by cancer or whatever, whether they were behind supporting that or behind the idea or whatever it was that they wanted to do with it, so many people just really, really committed, and just kind and willing. And it was really surprised. Like, I was so, you know, I had an inkling that maybe people were like that, but it was really nice to just see it sort of on a weekly basis.
That's great. The period.
It was quite heartwarming. Yeah.
So when you're doing the project, you're pretty much directing, you've got a producer in.
Yeah.
Say someone's listening to this podcast, for example, and I mean, I'm going to make a short.
Yeah.
And I've got an amount of money. What would you look? What are the main things that you'd say to them? Say, right, here is your essentials. Like, you need, what are the things that saved your bacon? Or you thought that, or the, you know, roles that you need to assist you, like,
yeah,
doing everything yourself.
I think like there's so many different ways that you can make something. So I can only obviously speak from my experience.
Yeah.
It's obvious, but. I did make a lot of stuff before this. I made something that cost me an entire summer's or you know, whatever worth of money. And I realised I wasn't quite in, this is like going a few years back now, but I realised I wasn't quite there to be spending that kind of money. I was like, oh shit, I could have done with that. I could have done something with that 10 grand and I've just fucking blown it on something.
Yeah.
And I didn't really know what I was doing. And like the DP... asked, just said, yeah, we'll do this. And I was like, ah, well, okay, I don't know, you're the DP. So I was like, yeah, I didn't like that feeling, like not knowing what everyone... I had an idea because I come from a performance and writing background. So I had an idea of how a shot should be composed, and I had an idea of how I wanted to tell a story. But when it came to kit, I was like, yeah, okay, you can have that stuff. Whereas by this project, after doing a lot more low rent stuff, I did stuff on like HD cams and other stuff after that one. So I was like, I don't want to, I need to really know, I'm going to go and run on other people's sets. I'll do different odd jobs in other sets. I'm going to swap, I'm going to like basically dismantle the camera and find out everything that has to work, so that when someone says, oh, we really need this stuff, director, I can go, no, we don't need that stuff because I know the answer now. So I did all that. I did some events photography. I learned all about the history of photography, from going from literally painting portraits to the stencil kind of portrait thing you would do when you had this old, almost pseudo camera, and then the camera, and then all the photochemistry that went with it too. You know, I just learned all of that stuff so that I could understand each department, basically, because that's what depending on the type of director you are, you do get actor directors that don't know all that stuff and leave it up to chance. But the kind of films that I like and the kind of ones I want to make is where you do have an input into what color the wall is or whatever, because all of those things do have an effect on your audience, subconsciously or consciously. So yeah, I did a lot of slightly cheaper things. I basically blew a load of money on something that was, you know, it was a pretty good script and it was a good idea and whatever, but it just didn't have the production value it needed.
But if you hadn't have blown that 10 grand,
yeah,
if had
yeah,
that
yeah.
feeling, then you wouldn't have forced yourself into
oh, 100%, 100%.
So that's the answer. Spunk up 10 grand on a film.
Yeah, blow your cash, and then realise it was a bad idea, and then learn. Or start small, don't do the 10 grand thing, just start with smaller stuff and incrementally build it, which might be a slightly better idea, and then you'll save 10 grand.
It's break time. Time to have a break. All the talking, it's too much. I just want to have a little bit of music in the middle to calm myself down. Now I'm ready to get back to the podcast.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
And when you're directing stuff, then it's quite a stressful job being the focal point. I was speaking to Ian Morris in the last podcast about how he was doing night shoots and he was just totally exhausted. but everyone looks to you as the sort of you're the anchor, basically. How did you find that? How did that make you feel? How did you go about it?
Funnily enough, I was really at ease with. I think it's because if you act or perform or whatever, you're kind of used to wanting attention. So when people come up to me, I'd be like, hey, yeah, finally, someone's paying me. But no, I think I felt like doing the really big shoot days, I felt scary. I was actually kind of worried about how at ease I felt with there being trucks outside and stuff, because it was a big, you know, all the other stuff.
So can you describe what the big shoot day, so this is sort of a party sort of scene.
And
how many extras were there and how many people?
We had about 100 people. We had two units, 100 extras, two units of about 10, production design, the art department was probably about 8. We had about 4 caterers, about 5. So you're looking at, for that day, about 150. You got two lorries. I arrive in my car and there's two lorries outside. And you're immediately thinking of being an extra on some Warner Brothers film 8 years ago and going, Jesus, there's lorries outside. Because I just felt completely at home. I was kind of worried about how at home I felt. I was like, yeah, this is great. This is just like a massive big show. This is like, but everyone there was excellent. Like, Jordan brought on so many amazing crew.
This is your DP.
This is a DP. Yeah. Jordan brought on so many amazing crew. So many people helped. It wasn't like, you know, there was a lot of planning that goes into stuff like that. The all of the crew were amazing. They're all really, really talented and working on major shows in their own right. So it's not like people weren't learning on the job. It was one of those things where you have to be. We were obviously like so gracious for anybody helping, but there was nobody. You know, there was only a couple of people maybe that were really super learning on the job. Everyone really knew what they were doing. So. It's not like, oh, come on, we're all underdogs and we can't make this work. Yeah. These people are working on shows that are on BBC, like high-end dramas and stuff like that. So you've got that to support you. It's working like clockwork. They're really great. I think because the run-up, having done this earlier thing 7 years ago, having seen big film sets, small film sets, you know, BBC sitcoms, seeing the structure of all of these things, documentaries, by the time you've been on all of those sets and by the time you've, you know, worked in different roles and whatever, you feel very like, okay, there's only so many ways you can skin this cat. Obviously there are loads of different ways you can skin the cat, but I know the way that suits me and my personality and my vision the most. And of course it's terrifying, and there are a couple of days where I, you know, I did cry and was just thought, how the hell we basically shot a scene with a slightly notable person, and none of this is online, so you won't be able to ever know who it is.
Yeah.
But and then they pulled out, and that was just like, oh, I've just shot a day with some amazing people.
Wow.
They've kind of messed the whole thing up. We have to recast it. This is terrible. This is for charity as well. How can you do that? I kind of like had a little exchange with it, but. You know, you have people around you that pick you up, and you know that you're there for to pick them up. And it was never a thing of like, oh, we're not going to make it. It just was a setback. But you just keep going, and if you care about that initial idea enough to be able to go through all of that, then you're on to win it. In the same way that, you know, if you've got a mate or you've got someone that you love, that you go, I will go through all of this. I'll say all those vows about health, sickness and arguments, you know, like, you will do it. If you don't want to go through whatever pain or rejection or whatever it is that you might, whether it's for a series or for a film or an album or whatever, then you have to reevaluate whether the idea is worth like going through with.
I think there should be some sort of assessment at the start.
Yeah.
An online test.
I love assessment.
How passionate you are about the project.
Yeah,
you need to be about twice as much as you think you need to be for something to actually work. It's just tons of hard work. I mean, you showed me quickly an edit of this film.
Yeah.
The amount of cuts in it, the amount of shots.
Yeah.
For a short film, are quite incredible. I mean, how many shoot days did you do on this film?
I haven't actually kind of worked it out, but someone asked me this the other day. I think we probably shot about 15, maybe like 10 to 15 properly crewed days, probably nearer 10, and then about 5 random pickup days that may have just been me and the actress, like me and Keely, or like just me, Keely Jordan, and a couple of people, like quite skeletal days.
Mm-hmm.
So not, you know, more than your average short, but not like enough to quite go, oh, you should have just made a feature out of it. Like, because I mean, if you did, you would have needed a lot more days than that. And that, you know, I think because of businesses giving us the locations either at like 99% discount rates or free, you know, it would have probably cost quite a lot to make.
And that's because of
and
the
you
charity.
And other people saying yes to it, just be coming on board and being on it. If everyone had taken a rate, I think we would probably be talking, you know, 100k or something stupid like that, and nothing like that got spent. It was like 20k.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah.
That's great.
So it looks good for what it cost.
And what are you going to do to raise the money then? Are you going to sell it online? What's the plan with it?
Yeah, so the two sort of avenues that we're exploring, well, one of them is a definite, would be that it will go online and you pay $1.99 or whatever. And that money goes to ClickSargent, or like all the profits from that go to ClickSargent. So it'll be on Vimeo. You pay $1.99. If you hate it, it doesn't matter because you're still giving money to charity. But yeah, a low sort of figure like that. And then I'm also talking to a couple of broadcasters about potentially doing that. You know, appearing on a television station. In which case, you'll have to tune into that. And then that would be a, can you just give the money to the charity? It would have been great to have, but give the money to the charity. Don't give it to me first. Just give it to charity. And yeah, so they're the two things. And we're also going to do a festival run, but I want to do, we're doing a fundraising premiere in November, which is fundraising for the charity, so that people can see it, you know, all the cast, crew and whatever can see it, and anybody else, and see if we can get some cash for ClickSargent. So yeah, that's the plan for the film.
What drives you to do it? What makes you want to be direct things? And what is it? What is the need? That's probably quite a big question that sort of propels you on to do it when it's such a hard and exhausting job. Especially now you know what it's like having directed shorts over, you know, a 4-year period where you've got to try and pull favours constantly.
Yeah.
And yet you still want to carry on making things.
I think it's I think there's like a lot of people say this. If you can do something else, just do it. Just don't do this. It's a terrible idea. It's a terrible idea. It's terrible. But if you really have to, like I've been like this since 10. I was in like Bugsy Malone as Bugsy Malone on a theatre thing, and then I saw the film and I was like, well, that's better than our stage thing. I'm just going to do films. I want to do film stuff. So I obsessed over that. I've always obsessed over comedy. I've always obsessed over music. I've always loved those things. Like, I love other things in life too. I like just walks. And you know,
everyone likes walks.
Everyone loves a walk.
I mean, I wish you'd get paid for walking.
If I could get paid for walking, I'd just do that. But you know, I love those things enough. And the other jobs look like they suck. Mm. I've done them. You must have done them. The other jobs kind of suck. So for me, I just want to do this. And that's, you know, there isn't really another option. I think if I, you know, you see people, whether it's in acting or film or TV or music or anything, you see people fall off because they just, oh, I don't want to do this. I can't. This is a bit much. I'm sacrificing too many other things. I want to bake cakes during the week, and I don't have time to do that. Like, and everyone else I know that is still in it just relentlessly wants to do it because they've just got that bug, you know, of wanting to do it.
It's an illness.
Yeah, I think it is an illness. I mean, you put out a lot of stuff. You love it, right?
Well, I don't know if I do, but I feel compelled to do it.
Yeah, it's the compulsion, and you know that they. I remember reading a Felix Dennis book, the publisher Felix Dennis, who's, and you know, compulsion is mandatory for any kind of venture, whether it's like a making a load of money, Wolf of Wall Street kind of thing, or whether it's being a huge stand-up or a band or whatever. You just have to want to do it, and I just want to do it. So, you know, if there ever comes a day when I don't want to do it, I guess I'll just not do it and do something else.
Go on a bloody long walk.
Go on a fucking long walk. In a like Forrest Gump way.
That'd be nice. That'd be a good way to end it all, wouldn't it?
But I'll walk. He ran.
Oh yeah,
I think running is a little too intense.
Yeah,
fuck I'll just walk.
Enjoy it.
I think it'll be a bit cooler.
Yeah. Great. Well, that's superb. So if people want to find out about you and trend on Twitter, what's your social media stuff?
Social media. So to trend on Twitter has a website, which is totrendontwitter.com. It's also on Facebook, facebook.com/totrendontwitter. I'm on facebook.com/AndyWoodingOfficial, because I think either I just wanted the official on the end, or someone already had Andy Wooding. I can't remember.
You might be that someone probably had Andy Wooding.
There aren't that many Andy Wooding. Maybe I just wanted the official, perhaps. I can't remember. There is a trout or a carp fisherman called Andy Wooding that, if you scroll down and Google enough, you will see him just wielding massive fish.
I bet he's really annoyed he didn't get the official one.
He was on
Facebook looking up going, I can't believe Andy Wooding's official's gone.
Oh, yeah. Well, he should have thought about that. Andy Wooding, you should have thought about that before.
Could have Andy Wooding verified, that's another way of it.
There's that. I'm on Instagram, I guess just type in Andy Wooding and I come up. I don't think there's anyone else on that at the moment.
Well, if it's a guy holding fish, that's the other.
Yeah.
It's the other Andy.
If you like fish, go for that guy, because I've got nothing to offer in the fish department.
I'm going to look up Andy Wooding and see this guy and start following with. Everyone start following him. All the 20 listeners start following Andy Wooding, the fisherman, and be really pleased.
Yeah, I'd love that. I think he's doing more for the world than I am. He's taking fish out of the water, showing you them,
putting them back in,
and then putting them back in. You know, who doesn't?
Let's hope he's putting them.
He might not be doing that, in which case he's a fish murderer.
Well, we can't actually say for sure until we've researched his other Andy Wooding.
I don't want this podcast to cause any lawsuits. But Andy Wooding, I'm sure you're a nice guy.
It's a good name.
And that's just me talking to me. I don't think there's any. Yeah, Instagram, Twitter. I'm on all the things.
Cool, man. Well, thank you very much for your time. Fascinating. Thank you for talking to me. And I look forward to seeing the film. And I'll put details on the Facebook and Twitter when the film comes out, so all listeners can tune into it. All right.
Yes, thank you very much for having me. I love what you do, and I love this podcast. So thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
That's great. And remember, listeners, stay hygienic.
Stay hygienic, guys.
Marek makes a movie. Marek makes a movie.
This season, prepare for every season with the Allbirds Mizzle Collection. These shoes were made for adventures in rain, shine, mist, or snow. Go to allbirds.com and use code FRESHSOCKS for a free pair of socks with your purchase.